Hey, this is Mike Bobbitt. I'm a guy who used to make things, and sometimes I still do. These days, I prefer making podcasts, and I have a new one called Soundtrack to My Life. On this podcast, I talk to different creative people about the music that shaped them. Sometimes the conversations are funny, and sometimes they're just kind of sweet.
I love that Pina Colada song. Yeah, I do.
Rihanna has had a huge impact on my songwriting.
I'm diving into the ocean, finding that one fish that has the toxins, and I'm just drinking those toxins all day.
Maybe they're saying, like, you should now go forth and rock. It's like a peace be with you situation.
I also have a playlist called F-Jams. One into it, just in case.
We dance to a jazz version of My Favorite Things.
Soundtrack to My Life. It's available exclusive on Spotify. It's a exclusive. I'm going to try to make that word take off. It's a music plus talk show, meaning I can play songs in their entirety. So think of this as an interactive playlist with some of the coolest creative people I know, and you should know too. Soundtrack to My Life, a Spotify exclusive.
Welcome back to Great Lakes Confidential with Angie and Marty. Hey, Marty.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad.
At the time of this recording, which is Tuesday, October the 8th, I am doing really, really, really good because the Tigers won yesterday.
Yes.
And it was a very intense game, from what I understand. I had to listen to it in the car because I was driving. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I now, we do this thing where whenever there's a Tigers game or her son is playing baseball because her son is on a travel team, we text back and forth and we sort of watch the game together.
Yeah.
So I'm driving yesterday, listening to the game. My sister's texting me, trying to, encourage me and encourage the team. And I'm trying to drive, but I'm also trying to listen. And I'm not really one for listening to games on the radio, so I'm very confused. So.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like, I find, like, especially in, like, the real high-pressure games, like playoff games, all that stuff, I find listening on the radio is better for me than sitting and watching it actually happen.
Really?
Yeah, because I get so, like, you know, worked up and I'm running around and pacing. When it's like when I'm listening on the radio, it's like I'm just waiting for somebody to tell me.
Yeah.
You know, so I can take the disappointment without actually seeing it. This really worked for the Lions back in the day. Like, I'd always listen to the Lions games on the radio because you know, number one, I like listening to, like, the local broadcasters that actually know and love the teams.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing. You know, you're actually listening versus listening to, like, some national broadcasters who more than likely like the other team more and talk more about the other team.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I mean, especially with the Lions back in the day, like, now the Lions are kind of everyone's darling in the NFL. So it's different. But back in the day, yeah, I mean, they wouldn't have anything nice to say about the Lions. So you listen to the local guys, you know, they're filling it all in. They love the team as much as you do. And
Yeah. Well,
listen to,
I have a hard time paying attention when I'm listening because I can't keep all the players' names straight.
Yeah.
And so they're talking about, you know, they're saying, like, the last name of players, and I'm trying to visualize it, and it... Baseball, I feel like baseball moves faster when you're listening than when you're watching. And so it's like my brain just can't keep up. And I get so lost and so confused. But I've been listening to a lot more games than I ever have in the past. So maybe I'm starting to get used to it and my brain is learning. I don't know.
But... like, to me, it's funny you mentioned it because to me, it feels like baseball's got a lot more, like, time to fill. Like, you know, it moves slower than like a football game does. So like when you listen on the radio, there's just a lot of like chatter.
Yeah.
Too, you know, like between the pitches and all that, and just, you know, chatting about something else. And then, you know, it's a 3-2 pitch.
I think that's another reason why it's hard for my brain to keep up, because I don't know if I've shared with you, but I was recently diagnosed as having ADHD.
Welcome to the club, my friend.
Shocking.
Yeah.
So when I'm listening and, you know, they're babbling about something or they're doing like a commercial and then they're like, you know, and then they switch back to the game, my brain is like, whoa, wait, what just happened? Like, where, you know, I'm still on the commercial for the roofing company or whatever it is.
Yeah. I think maybe that's why that my ADD is why I like listening on the radio more. Because when things are on TV, I'm just, you know, scrolling on my phone anyway and just listening. So maybe that's how I got used to it.
So weird how ADD brains are different like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's a different podcast altogether. So.
Yeah. Well, anyway, congratulations on your diagnosis.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been interesting this whole time, you know, from the time I was like 17. And I know I've talked about being bipolar before on the show, but I was diagnosed fairly early in my life with bipolar disorder. And now that I'm being treated for ADHD, it's kind of, you know, the question is, was I ever really bipolar? There's a lot of, you know, if you do a Venn diagram, there's a lot of overlapping symptoms, especially for women. And so I've been doing much better now that I'm being treated for ADHD, and I'm on Adderall and I can focus, and it's just kind of like a different world, and my brain is quiet and it's really bizarre. I like it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I really got to get health insurance again.
Yeah, health insurance is a game changer.
I mean, again, we're a completely different podcast we're on right now. But
right.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I got my diagnosis right when I got off insurance.
That's tough.
So I was like, thanks. It's like a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, speaking of, that's a different podcast. I'm sure that there's somebody listening right now that's like, why are you guys talking about stuff that's not Michigan related?
I know a lot of people in Michigan who have ADHD.
Samesies.
All right.
So anyways, welcome back to the show. If you've stuck around the last 6 minutes, we love you. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
So we're just going to jump right into it. According to Merriam-Webster, a ghost town is a once flourishing town, wholly or nearly deserted, usually as a result of the exhaustion of some natural resource. So how does that play into Michigan? Well, we have easily over 100 ghost towns.
I believe it.
Grand Traverse County has the most with 12. And then there are 16 ghost towns within 50 miles of Novi alone.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's crazy to think that.
Yeah, you don't really think that about Novi. Mm-mm. Like, you know, it's kind of like the western edge, you know, of the sprawl that is Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start getting out more into a little bit more country past there, like Commerce and Wixom and all that. But still, it's still pretty urban.
It
you
is.
You don't think about, like, ghost towns in that area.
No, and the thing is, like, I think the lumber trade was a really big reason for, like, so many ghost towns in our state.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's the case in the Novi area, too. It you know, is that, was that the natural resource that was basically depleted? And
I wonder.
You know, I don't know. So
I know in the UP there's a lot because of, like, the copper mines closing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Copper and lumber up north, too. Is a big one.
Yeah.
So today we're going to talk about, I think it's pronounced Arrel, Michigan, A-R-A-L. So Arrel, Michigan, which became a ghost town in 1922.
Wow.
Now this story has kind of a, I don't know, a dark side to it.
I've never heard of this place.
I never did either. It's in one of my ghost towns of Michigan book that I believe my son Jordan bought for me somewhere along the line. So yeah, I picked it up the other day. I happened to find it, and Errol, Michigan was in there. So I thought, let's talk about that. So Errol was located on Lake Michigan, where Otter Creek empties into the lake just south of Esch Road, a few miles south of Empire, Michigan. Today, Esch Beach is one of the most popular swimming beaches in the lakeshore, but in the 1880s, Errol was a booming lumber town.
All right.
So Esch is spelled E-S-C-H, and it is still, like I said, it's still one of the most popular swimming beaches over on Lake Michigan. So when the United States acquired land, it first had to be surveyed before it was made available to individuals. So in the summer of 1849, Orange Risden was one of the surveyors assigned to the area around Grand Traverse Bay. In 1853, soon after he finished the survey, Risden and his wife Sally bought 122 acres where Otter Creek emptied into Lake Michigan. So last week we talked about Old Sauk Trail.
Yep.
Interestingly enough, in researching that episode, Orange Risden's name was mentioned as being the survey of the Old Sauk Trail in 1825.
Orange Risden. That's another one we got to add to the Great Lakes Confidential Hall of Fame.
Yep. Yep. I'm
Andrew
sure.
Schoolcraft, Orange yep. Risden. And then I totally forgot the names that we kept coming up with during the Underground Railroad episode. There was a name or two that.
There were. There were. And I can't remember who they were now either.
See, anyway, that's not the focus of this week.
I research and I do the show, and then my brain goes completely blank and I forget everything that I've read.
I don't know. You're doing great. You just go back and listen to an old episode.
That's true. I can do that. So anyway, the area's first white settler was a printer and photographer named Robert Bancroft. After service in the Civil War, he came north seeking peace and quiet. He had purchased the 122 acres from Orange and Sally in 1864. He cleared 20 acres and built a log cabin for his family to live in. He planted black locust trees and an apple orchard around the cabin. After years of peace and quiet, lumber speculators arrived and began looking for stands of white pine. Most of the forest in this area was hardwood, but there were some stands of white pine inland from Otter Lake. To try to make the best of it, Bancroft opened a general store. I love this story.
Not a bad idea.
He's like, I just want peace and quiet. And then he just kind of gave up. He's like, all right, I guess I'll build a store.
I might as well make some money off these guys.
Yep. In 1882, a Dr. Arthur O'Leary, who owned most of the land in Lake Township, built a sawmill on Otter Creek and began to harvest the white pine growing along the lake shore. Like many other places in Michigan, the town of Errol grew around the mill. By the mid-1880s, it had a population of around 200, mostly mill hands, loggers, and their families, and consisted of several frame houses, two boarding houses, the mill and its buildings, the general store and post office, and a camp for the Indian workers about a quarter of a mile to the south.
How'd they come up with that name?
I don't know.
Okay.
That I did not see in my research. In 1886, a Wisconsin lumberman, Charles T. Wright, leased the mill from O'Leary. By then, most of the pine was gone, but Wright kept the mill busy turning out shingle bolts, fence posts, railroad ties, and hardwood for flooring and furniture. Charlie Wright was known as an attractive man, but he was also known to have a violent streak that could surface when he was drinking. In 1889, he got into a dispute over taxes with county authorities, and on August 10th, Sheriff A.B. Case sent two of his deputies, Neil Marshall and Dr. Frank Thurber, with a writ of attachment for the logs at the mill. Charlie met them at the mill with his rifle, a pistol, and apparently a, quote, snootful of whiskey.
Oh, no.
After a violent argument, Charlie shot and killed both men, then disappeared into the woods.
That handsome devil got into the bottle again.
Deputy Marshall was killed with one shot from the rifle, and Dr. Thurber was killed with a pistol, shot in both the chest and head.
Wow, that's like some Young Guns action.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for Charlie, Neil Marshall and Dr. Thurber were quite popular in the community. Word traveled fast that they had been killed, and by late afternoon, a crowd gathered at the mill looking for Charlie. They were planning to, quote, string him up.
Well, he asked for it.
He kind of did.
Homecoming king.
Mm-hmm. Charlie was captured after one of his Indian workers, Lahala, revealed his hiding place under torture. Sheriff Case hanged him from a pine tree, instructing him to, quote, shake his legs vigorously when he was ready to talk. Apparently, this method wasn't uncommon in those days. Kind of morbid.
Yeah.
The sheriff and his men were able to spirit Charlie Wright away from the angry mob and took him by boat to Frankfurt. Several months later, he was tried, convicted of 2 counts of murder in the first degree, and sentenced to life at Jackson Prison. It was said that he became a favorite of the warden, who let Charlie drive his horse and carriage on errands. Reminds me of Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, a little bit, except what the guy in Shawshank didn't actually commit the crime, right?
That's true. He did not commit the crime. Also, do you remember when we talked about Hoover? Wasn't it Hoover? And remember there was a murder on the side of the road, and then they thought maybe the prisoners were let out by some guards to go and kill this man?
No, I don't remember that.
I'll have to find the episode. But yeah, okay. we did an episode on it. Anyways, that kind of reminds me of this too. So after serving only 12 years, Michigan Governor Hazen Pingree commuted his sentence to 17 years, and with time off for good behavior, he was paroled in May of 1902. According to legend, Charlie Wright, on his way back to Wisconsin, stopped off at Errol and visited his former wife, who had divorced him while he was in prison, and married a carpenter. She persuaded Charlie, who had a beautiful baritone voice, to sing one of her favorite songs, and she fell weeping into his arms.
Rock-a-bye, baby.
The carpenter, likewise affected, gave her back to Charlie with his blessing. Now,
oh
this,
my goodness.
This story,
that is a hell of a voice.
This story may or may not be true. Either way,
well,
with...
Well, let's have a sing-off for her.
See? Either way, with or without his wife, Charlie returned to Wisconsin, and aside from one brief visit, was never seen in Michigan again. Now back to the town of Arl. Or Errol, my bad. Errol had a brief respite in 1908 when the mill was taken over by members of King Ben Purnell's House of David. By that time, timber of all kinds had basically run out, and the bearded, quote, Israelites gave up around 1911 and moved back to Benton Harbor. Errol dwindled after that. People died or drifted away. Other people ransacked and plundered the buildings for their white pine, said to be the finest in the world. The last resident, Robert Bancroft's son, Bertie, turned off the lights and closed the door on Errol forever in 1922. All that remains are a few spiles of the old dock, the foundations of the Bancroft house and the general store, and of the old mill steam engine, and the hanging tree.
And this is near Empire?
Yes.
Near Beulah?
Yeah.
By the Cherry Hut.
By the Cherry Hut. Yeah, I do believe.
I heard Cherry Jerry was actually based off of this guy with how handsome he was.
Cherry Jerry. Yeah. I'm looking.
That's
Orin...
the mascot for all the listeners. That's the mascot to the Cherry Hut.
The disappointment that was the Cherry Hut.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. And you know what? I saw that. It popped up as like a must-see if you're in Michigan. One of the best restaurants in Michigan. Like, I don't know about that. But then again, maybe it was my fault.
No, I don't think it was our fault. I think it was the restaurant. I don't think that it... I feel like they advertised being like home-cooked meals, but I don't think they were home-cooked. I don't think the stuff was from scratch. I don't believe that.
I just remember ordering a chopped steak and stupid me ordered a medium. And then I remembered, oh, a chopped steak is just hamburger. Now I'm eating raw hamburger.
Yeah. I forgot about that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'm still alive.
That's good. Warren G. Hooper. We did an episode on Warren G. Hooper, season 1, episode 41.
Mm-hmm.
And the murder took place on the side of the road.
Okay.
And one of the theories was that some of the prisoners, I believe from Jackson Prison, were, I don't want to say released, because they weren't actually released, but just like the guards let them kind of escape to handle this you know, take him out.
Yeah.
So. I wonder if it was all around the same time. I'll have to go back and listen to that other episode and see what year that happened, because it'd be really interesting if we could link the two together.
Yeah, like if he was one of the prisoners.
Oh my God, how crazy would that be?
That would be. It'd be nuts, but you know, it wouldn't be that surprising.
It wouldn't be that surprising, but it would be bananas.
The man had an appetite for murder. We already know that.
Yeah.
That's established fact.
Over some logs, like he, right. Like a couple, you know, a couple bucks for taxes or whatever. Like the dude just kind of lost his marbles and.
Right.
I mean, I'll.
When you give him a bottle, he'll probably do anything for you.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was going to say. Like, I'll say whiskey makes you do, like, crazy things. I like whiskey. I've never committed a murder, so...
That we know of.
Nope, never committed a murder. But, like, I don't know. It just seems... But, you know, in the 1800s, I guess, you know...
And murder is kind of a way of life, it seemed like, back then.
You'd take things into your own hands a lot, it seemed.
Yeah, things seemed like the world was a lot more dangerous. Like, I think the world is probably the safest it's ever been, but people seem to think it's the most dangerous it's ever been.
Yeah. Right now. Yeah.
When it's like I was just having a conversation with somebody about Kmart. Because, like, the very last Kmart is closing, which, Michigan company, but, like, the very last Kmart's closing in New York or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's talk about when I was a kid in the 80s, you know, my mom, like, you know, she'd go to Kmart and she would just drop me off in the toy section, go do all of her shopping. And then when she was ready to check out, she'd grab me. So here I am, like, just staring at, like, toys for like a half hour, 45 minutes. And isn't that exactly like how Adam Walsh was kidnapped and killed?
I think, you know, so. What I mean?
And this was the same era. Nobody cared.
Mm-hmm.
People were like, whatever. You just put your kids in the toy area and you do your shopping.
Yeah. What a time to be alive.
I know. And now it's like, you know, people wouldn't let their kids out of their sight. Like, they think everyone, you know, everyone's trying to kill their kids or something.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe their kid's a jerk. Who knows? But I think in general, like, you know, it's a safer time now than it was then, than it's ever been.
Somebody was talking about, like, I don't know. It was on, and I should never read the comments. I know better. But somebody had commented something on Facebook about, you know, how it's unsafe for kids today and you can't let your kids out of your sight and all this other stuff. And all I was thinking was, like, do you not remember the Oakland County child killer story? Right. Like, did we forget about that? Because that dude was just out there, like, murdering children, like a bunch of them.
Right.
And I think so many people think that, like, we live in such a dangerous time now because news is so instantaneous that, like, when when somebody is kidnapped or murdered, you find out about it within minutes of it happening. Whereas, you know, back then it was like it took a while to get the word out and, you know, whatever. But yeah, right. I mean, I
it's
think
24
you're...
hour news now. It's, you know, 100 different ways of getting that news.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's, yeah. It's just, it's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, I mean, you know, you took the law into your own hands back in the 1800s, and
yeah, I had to.
But this is what happened. You end up in prison, and then the town that you're in, it becomes a ghost town. So maybe maybe don't murder people.
You started trying to get away from everything. Kill it with your own hands.
Also, the House of David. I know we've, like, mentioned it before. We haven't talked a lot about it. Do you know anything about the House of David?
I know a bit about it. Like, it was, like, kind of a cult in the Benton Harbor area, like, in the 1920s, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know much about it at all, but I know that I've heard of it, and I know we've mentioned it. Like, it came up in another show.
Maybe cult is harsh. I mean, it was a sect. It was definitely a sect.
What's the difference?
They had a baseball team. That's what I remember about them. They had a baseball team. Well, I mean, cults just get, like, a bad reputation. You know, you just hear a cult and you just assume, you know, oh, they're doing all sorts of bad things.
Yeah.
You know, keeping people against their will. Whereas a sect, I guess, is more of an offshoot of like a mainstream sort of religion.
Okay.
So, I feel comfortable calling them a sect.
Okay.
But maybe they were a cult. I don't really remember the whole story, except I remember they had a baseball team.
Interesting.
That's what they were known for.
They were known for their baseball team?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, we're going to have to dive into this on another episode, because I'm invested now.
Yeah, like, I don't remember much about it now. Like, I just remember they had a baseball team, and they won the World Series. No, they didn't, but they...
they won the 1984 World Series.
That was the Tigers.
Yeah.
They won the 1915 World Series.
Oh, got it.
No, but, you know, this was before, you know, you had, you know, your Major League Baseball was so structured, so you just had, like, different teams all over the place and playing anybody. And, yeah, it was like a legitimate baseball team.
Hmm. That's interesting.
And now they're the Whitecaps. No, they're not the Whitecaps.
I wonder how many... probably not a lot, right? Probably not a lot of cults have sports teams.
You know, I mean, you'd be surprised. Like, I'm trying to think of other examples. I'm sure there are some. I guess generally they prefer bands over sports, which is maybe the type of person that gets more attracted to a cult, you know?
Did you say bands, like music?
Yeah, like music, you know, yeah.
Huh.
I tend to find, you know, more bands than teams.
Yeah.
In cults.
Yeah, well, Charlie Manson was real big into music.
Yeah. And there was a documentary. I mean, this is about California. That's a whole different kettle of worms. It's not, you know, the Great Lakes at all, but there was a documentary on Netflix, I think, called The Source Family.
Mm-hmm.
It was worth watching, about a cult that, like, the guy started, like, had, like, a, you know, like, an organic food restaurant. And he released several albums. Father Yod was his name.
Never heard of him. So,
yeah, they really seem to like music more than sports. But these guys were into baseball. Maybe they were in a band, too. I don't know. But baseball, for sure.
Well, we'll definitely do an episode on the House of David, because it sounds interesting. And I've never heard of a cult or a sect having a baseball team. So I'm definitely interested in learning.
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely, like, you know, like professional. Like a professional team.
Hmm.
You know, maybe not as good as the Cubs or the Tigers, but...
Right.
You know, somewhere in the middle right there.
Okay.
Ann Arbor.
Yeah, interesting. So, in terms of ghost towns, have you ever been to... I don't want to say, have you ever been to a ghost town? Because that sounds weird. But have you ever been to an area where, like, there's remnants from a ghost town?
I don't think, like... Not necessarily in the wild, like, not that I didn't know about before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does that make sense?
Kind of.
Like, I've never been, like, you know, anywhere where someone's like, hey, there's a ghost town down the road. Let's go to it.
Mm, okay. That makes sense. Well,
yeah.
We did a show, also season one, on Père Chenet, mm-hmm. And that's a ghost town. And I drove up on it.
Yes.
But I've never, you know, that was as far as I went for exploring. But yeah, I mean, there's so many in the state. It's like, I'm curious.
Yeah, like, maybe I've been to one, but in my mind, I just have a different impression. Like, I imagine it would have to have, like, a, you know, like a saloon with swing doors. I don't know. Like, if I didn't see that, it wasn't a ghost town.
Right, yeah. No, that's legit. Like, your brain doesn't register that it's a ghost town if there's not an old-timey saloon.
Right, exactly. And, like, a player piano
just
playing on its own. No, I just think, like ghost towns, I think, in a lot of cases, it's probably, like, very little that's still there. Like, maybe just, like, the structure of a building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that's still there. So you don't even realize, like, you're going past one.
Right.
Like, I think about that area kind of between, like, Livingston area, Livingston County area, that, like, between Lansing and Ann Arbor.
Okay.
Like, that kind of farmland there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, places like Stockbridge and Gregory. And you're driving, and, like, you know, you'll just be going down, like, a little road, and there's just, you know, what looks like two barns that got knocked down that are no longer there. Was that once a little town? Who knows?
Probably. I mean, what'd we say? There's 16 within 50 miles of Novi, so...
Yeah.
That's got to be 50 miles within 50 miles of Novi, that area, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, it could be.
You know, like you think about stuff like that, or those areas where you're driving, and there's just, like, the one, like, you know, one-room schoolhouse that's still there and mm-hmm. preserved. Was there more of a town around there at some point?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Huh.
Like, does that qualify? I don't know.
Well, if you go on Google, go on the old Google machine, there's mm-hmm. a list. You can find a list on Wikipedia of the majority of the ghost towns, like, in the state of Michigan. And yeah. like I said, there's easily over 100 towns. So it's a pretty extensive list, but... They're just scattered all over the place. And some of them, you know, like Parachinet, obviously,
yeah.
that's one I'm like, oh, yeah, I know where that is. Yeah. Up by Gaylord.
Like Rawsonville.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to look this up real quick. Ghost towns in Michigan. Like Alcona. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's places on this list that I've, like, heard of.
Yeah.
Branch and Branch County, Colonville.
Is that near Colon?
It doesn't say. Let's see. Clare County.
Okay, that's not near Colon then.
Yeah, so it's called Colonville, and it's in Sheridan Township. So, you know, there's a lot of them. There used to be a town called Singapore. In Michigan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Lathrop is on here. Lathrop or whatever it's called. Whitefish Point is on this list. And I was kind of curious about that because I didn't realize that Whitefish Point was like at one point a town.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize that either. But then you think about like I think the UP, you know, you think about like Calumet,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is still a town. But from what I understand, you know, 100 years ago, it was like a boom town.
Hmm.
And I think there's just a lot of that in the UP where, you know, 100 years ago, this place was booming.
Yeah.
And now it's not. And I mean, maybe like Whitefish Point was just, you know, it didn't even have to be a big town.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, you don't really think about like, you know, you think about the lighthouse there.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah. There was a place called Pinnabog and a place called Pinnapog.
Pinnabog and Pinnapog?
Yeah.
Wow. Were they near each other?
I don't know because there's only information about Pinnabog, not Pinnapog. But Pinnabog yeah. was over by Port Austin.
Okay.
So Huron County. But it doesn't say where Pinnapog.
I like to imagine that they were like near each other and they were rival high schools.
Right. There used to be a place called Podunk.
I believe it.
Podunk, Michigan. So, yeah, there's a ton of them. I mean, Rawsonville's on this list. Rattle Run. Shavehead.
Shavehead?
Yeah.
Where was that near?
It doesn't say. Page does not exist. So I don't know. Yeah. Who knows?
Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah. we'll have to explore some more of these because I wonder how many. It's weird how, now that I'm thinking about ghost towns a little bit more, it's weird how like this ghost town, there was a murder and then things kind of fizzled out like soon after that, right? With the lumber trade yeah. and all that stuff. But then like same kind of similar situation happened like in Parachinet, yeah. where like there was a death, right? I think there was fires, so there was multiple deaths.
Yeah.
And then same sort of situation, it just kind of fizzled out. So I wonder how many ghost towns have something like that, that like, I don't want to say triggered it, but if there's a lot of them, there's like some sort of a pattern. That'd be weird, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it makes sense to have, like, lumber, you know, all of a sudden you have no more trees to cut down. That makes sense. But
you also think about it with that one, you know, they arrested the guy who ran the store in town.
Yeah.
So without a store, was there really a town anymore?
I don't know. They couldn't find somebody else to run it?
Well, it wasn't theirs. They didn't have the keys.
All right.
Son of a bitch, you locked that guy up and he had the keys.
He had the keys with him still.
Yeah. Please, Charlie, just tell us where the keys are. You ain't getting my keys, Kappa.
Just give us the keys, see? I wonder if people in Michigan did really talk like that. That'd make me happy to know that that's how they talked back then. So
yeah, that would be. Thanks, Charlie. You're a real pipperoo.
Oh, real what?
Real pipperoo.
This show's going off the rails.
Yeah.
It usually
I just
does.
Stole that from, I got a girl from Kalamazoo.
Oh, I like that song.
She's a real pipperoo.
That's a good song.
Yeah.
We should talk about Kalamazoo someday, too. I'd like to know how they came up with that name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was Henry Schoolcraft.
Could be.
Came up with that name. Yeah.
Could be. All right. Well, we should probably end this before it just becomes just a total
ADD train wreck.
Yeah.
Us just going off on tangents. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll save the tangents for every tangent we mentioned, that could be a future show, so let's not spoil it.
That's true. Yeah, let's not mess that up. So, yeah, if you've listened this far, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, next week we're going to talk about Pine Knob.
All right.
So, that's a fun little show. So, so tune in next week for that one. And I hope you guys are having a great spooky season. Or by the time this is out, spooky season will probably be technically over, actually.
Turkey season, right?
And we'll be
turkey season.
Moving into the things that we're thankful for. So,
with your world champion Detroit Tigers.
Heck yeah. And the Lions are going to still be kicking butt, too, at that point.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, so... So, yeah, it's a good time to be a Michigander, for sure.
Yeah, and the Wings and the Pistons will be doing well, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Maybe the Wings.
Maybe the Wings. No shade to the Pistons. Sorry, guys. So, yeah, anyways, hope you're still enjoying the show. If you guys have show ideas, you can leave them on our Facebook page or email them to GreatLakesConfidential@gmail.com. If you've ever been to a ghost town and you have a cool story about it, we'd love to hear it. So you can send that
especially in. Especially if it's one that wasn't on our list. If you know about one that we didn't mention.
Yeah. Yeah. Love to hear more. That'd be awesome. So have a great rest of your week and be safe out there. Text us when you get home and watch for deer.
Bye.
Bye.